Welcome to this week's edition of Community Tides. This is Chris Bricker, and on alternate Fridays during the noon hour, I join my co-host, Siobhan Canty, President and CEO of Jefferson Community Foundation, to explore new developments, new paradigms, and the panorama of good work and creative thinking our region's vibrant communities do day in and day out. Hi, Siobhan.
Hi, Chris. Great to be with you.
Try that one.
Great to be with you, Chris.
Well, as a resident or visitor to our beautiful region, you may have witnessed offshore sea life in distress, and you may have had occasion to see some very capable individuals assisting these animals from entanglement in debris or ship strikes, as well as injured animals on or near the shore. Who are these folks? Well, here to tell you all about them and more and what they do is Casey McLean, and she's veterinary nurse and executive director of SR3, which stands for Sea Life Response Rehabilitation and Research. Casey is a licensed veterinary technician who has a degree in marine biology and a long-standing passion coupled with experience in marine animal medical care, rehabilitation, and conservation. She's worked in areas of sea turtle rehabilitation, wildlife rehabilitation, and marine mammal rehabilitation for over 12 years. She's an active member of the Marine Mammal Stranding Network in the Puget Sound and works on a variety of marine animals, including stranded seal pups, sea otters, and sea lions. And Casey's also a trained oil spill responder. All very important for our region. And Casey McLean, welcome to Community Tides.
Thanks for having me.
Hi, Casey. Thanks for joining us today. I wanted to start by asking you to share with our listeners the mission and the history of SR3.
Sure. Yeah. So SR3's mission is to promote the health and welfare of marine wildlife in the Pacific Northwest. And that might sound kind of broad and lofty, and what does that really mean? If you distilled it down, basically means that we rescue through rehabilitation and respond to animals on the beach, and then we also protect marine wildlife through our data-driven science. So a lot of times we're using our research to actually influence conservation policies and protect these animals out in the wild. And as far as our history goes, we became an organization back in 2017, very grassroots, and just started reaching out to the public and educating folks about ocean conservation. And around 2016, we were able to get an ambulance where we were able to respond to animals on the beach and start our southern resident killer whale research, as well as our large whale entanglement response. And then finally, a couple of years ago, just 2 years ago, actually, this April 21st, we were able to open a hospital where these animals can go when they are sick or injured or, you know, need to recuperate from an entanglement. And we're able to fully rehabilitate them there, and the goal is to return them to their wild population.
And Casey, I know the hospital is just south of Seattle, but I also know that Port Townsend is in your footprint. What area do you serve? Like, who can call you for a response?
We serve the entire coastal, of course, the state of Washington, and even into Oregon if we are called. So a great example on in Port Townsend is that we work with the local stranding network that's out there at the Port Townsend Marine Science Center. And, you know, they may go and check on an animal and see, one, does this animal really need help, or see what's going on with the situation and determine if they need to call us for some support or if they're just going to be bringing the animal over to the hospital and let us know that they're coming. So we work really closely with a lot of these folks throughout the state, and we will go anywhere that we are needed.
Well, Casey, when we talk about finding animals in distress in one way or another, whether they be offshore or near the shore, what are some of the protocols that folks should watch out for when they encounter situations and they want to help or they want to find a way of contacting somebody to be responding in some way within this region? You're covering a large piece of territory here.
Yeah, and one of the reasons we cover such a large piece of territory and go out to wherever we're needed is we are the only marine animal hospital in the Pacific Northwest that just focuses on these species with that kind of specialty expertise. So being the first and the only right around here, that's kind of what we're willing to do, is go wherever we're needed. I think the best thing people can keep in mind when you might find a marine animal that you think might be in distress or you're just not quite sure, I think our tendency as humans that care about these animals is to want to rush in and offer some comfort or reassurance that things will be okay. And that's really stressful to these animals. You have to remember they're wild, stressful to all wildlife, of course. And the best thing you can do is to stay as far back as possible. There's also the case where, as we approach harbor seal pup season, where that pup may just be taking a nap, and getting too close can actually scare the mom off and she may not return, which leaves that baby then abandoned and unable to survive on his own. So I think the very best thing you can do if you are concerned at all is to immediately call your local straining network hotline, which for you guys in Port Townsend would be at the Port Townsend Marine Science Center.
I had the opportunity, I want to talk about all of your services, but I want to start by talking about entanglements. I had the opportunity recently to see a video of a team out trying to disentangle a whale. I know that it wasn't your team in this case, but I know you do that, and you also do it for dolphins. It was harrowing. And I'm wondering if you can describe that process for people, because I didn't really appreciate what you all did until I saw that.
I think a lot of people might see YouTube videos or other videos online that show where people are, you know, just in their normal bathing suits and they grab some kind of knife they've got on a boat and jump in the water to help this whale, which is extremely dangerous. They don't see the results where people might be injured or even die from those kinds of activities. And here in the United States, none of that is allowed. It is illegal for a member of the public to attempt to disentangle a whale. So we do have a federal permit to be able to do this kind of work. And it's also not something we can do by ourselves. This takes a team. It takes multiple boats. It takes a team of 5 to 8 people of highly trained folks to be able to go out and do this. And again, all permitted by our federal government. So it is something that I think people don't realize exactly how dangerous and how much knowledge you need to have to do it. And of course, the whales, they don't know we're there to help. A lot of people might see things that show a little bit differently online, but I can promise you, as someone who's been out there, they are not cooperative. They're not thinking, oh, these people are here to help me, I should just slow down or not flap my tail when they try and do these things. And there's lots of specialty tools and equipment we need for this too. Human safety is always the top priority, and sometimes it can take days to actually get a whale disentangled. We may have to put satellite trackers on them and come back another day. And of course, you're also dealing with Mother Nature out there. So the winds and the waves, and we have very cold water, I'm sure everyone's aware. So you're not just jumping right in, which obviously, as I said, would be very dangerous. So it's all very challenging and very rewarding when we are able to do it. We also collect the gear, too.
Casey, I'm thinking of response time. You have a network of people that you can call upon in different, like, for example, a network out of the Marine Science Center that can respond right away. How does that all happen? How does that all happen?
So the Marine Science Center has an AmeriCorps member who is the straining network responder. And so they will, once they get a phone call, depending on what's going on that day, they will respond as quickly as they possibly can. They also have a network of volunteers. So they may send a volunteer out to check on the situation and see what's going on. And that's all run through the Port Townsend Marine Science Center. And then they will call us as things develop and they determine if that animal needs help. That's talking about animals that are on land for stranding. Entanglements as far as whales that could potentially be offshore, generally those phone calls could be coming from fishermen. Or they could be coming from a recreational boater, but often they are quite far away. And that's one of the challenges that present with that is the whales are free swimming. They might have gear tangled on them, but they can still swim quite quickly. And so we, depending on how far they are, it's hard to get out to that whale in a short amount of time.
And I want to make sure that the Marine Science Center would be the contact, not the Maritime Center here. You know, often those two are confused.
Gotcha. Yes, you are correct. It would be the Port Townsend Marine Science Center.
So tell us about the hospital. It's fairly new, I think. And what are some of the services and some of the animals that you serve there?
So the hospital is now 2 years old. We opened on Earth Day 2 years ago. So we just celebrated our birthday.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. It is relatively small, I guess I would say. We built it to be pretty flexible so that we could help animals, everything from a tiny harbor seal pup up to a very large sea lion, a sea otter, a sea turtle, or even possibly a small dolphin or porpoise, which is a very rare occurrence around here, thankfully. but we want it to be as flexible as possible so we can help whoever may need it. And we can't take huge numbers of animals there, so it's really important that folks understand the best chance for any of these animals is out in the wild, particularly for these young seal pups we'll be seeing soon. They make much better harbor seal moms than we do, so we want to make sure anything that's coming in actually does need the care that we can provide, because we do have some limited space in there. And we have a full veterinary hospital in there. We have a marine mammal veterinarian, myself, I'm a marine mammal vet tech, and several animal care specialists, and lots of volunteers that make this place run, because these animals require a lot of care, and it's a lot of cleaning and a lot of feeding. So we really appreciate our volunteers being there to help us out. And then we do a lot of education and outreach as well. That's a very important part of what we do, because we can't help every single animal that needs help, and we want to make sure that we're trying to preemptively let people know what's the best thing they can do to protect marine animals so they get to stay in the wild.
Reminds me of preventive medicine in a way. What can folks do in order sort of be proactive when it comes to protecting sea life?
There's a lot of things you can do in your own home, and I know some of them are things that maybe are not the most exciting, such as bringing your own bags and not using plastic or refusing plastic as much as you can. But those things do truly add up when we are all doing it, and it does make a difference to our marine animals. I think if you're a beach walker and you do see an animal alive or dead, reporting that right away is very helpful, because that all goes into a national database where we're getting a lot of our information of how these animals are doing out there in the wild and what is the health of our ecosystem. So turning that all in is great. And just thinking about ways that you can spread the word of both, you know, organizations like the Port Townsend Marine Science Center and SR3, letting people know that these are resources that are out there so that others are contributing as much as possible to the science that's going on.
You know, when I went to your website, Casey, I saw a number of things that you're doing on the research side of everything.
Yeah.
And quite impressive, actually, all of the different endeavors that you've got going in publications and research. Can you give us some examples of that?
Sure. One of our main research projects is the Southern Resident Killer Whale Health Research. Holly Fernbach is our researcher, and she's based up in the San Juans. So anytime the whales are in the area, her and her research partner, John Durbin, go out in our boat to take very detailed measurements using drones. And we're using all of this health data to actually influence what the conservation policies are, both on the Canadian side and on the U.S. side. And that's really a big important piece of what we do, is wanting to make sure that our science is actionable, particularly when you're talking about endangered species. So working with the government and state and federal governments to make sure we're interpreting our data and our science for them, and being as involved in any of these decisions as we can to push the conservation forward, is really important to us. But we also do that with other species. So the Puget Sound gray whales, the sounders, have come through recently, and we've been out collecting health data along with Cascadia Research Collective to look at how these whales are doing. We also do this with right whales on the East Coast, a very endangered population, killer whales in Antarctica, and killer whales in Alaska, which makes a really good comparison population for our southern residents too.
How many rescues are you doing in a month or in a year, whatever works? And what are you seeing? Like, what are the big themes? Why are animals needing rescue?
So it varies. It's very seasonal. So typically we're seeing a lot more animals in the month of May through about October. And part of that coincides with when the people are on the beach too to report these things. But that is kind of our peak season area. And then throughout the year, we get a smattering of other animals. And we've had over 90 patients come through the hospital so far. And really, every single patient that comes through there is coming in because they've had some sort of human impact. Now, that can be someone illegally picking them up, often not with some malice intent, but just didn't know that wasn't the best thing for the animal. There's also things that we see of parasite overload or diseases that they're coming in with. And that could be contributing from toxins in our water, our warming waters, which allow parasites to proliferate pretty badly. You know, toxins can lower these animals' immune systems, making them more susceptible to things. There's all kinds of things out there, from gunshots to boat injuries. Dog attacks are something we see happen sometimes, or dog bites, I shouldn't say attacks. So it's a smattering of reasons, really, but all human-related.
We are coming to a close today, but I don't want to end the show without asking you, how can our community help your work? And how can people be in touch with SR3?
We're still a very young, growing organization, and I think a lot of people are still just learning about us. So we love for you to tell your friends and family, anybody who would be interested in SR3, who we are and what we're doing. Certainly keep us and the Port Townsend Marine Science Center's Training Network hotline in mind if you're out on the beach and need see an animal in need. Yeah, I think that's really the best way. Of course, we're a 501c3 small nonprofit, and so all we really appreciate any financial support that people can provide.
And does the hotline get channeled, like, for example, directly to whatever part of the region that you need to alert volunteers?
Yes, there is an 800 number that you could add to your show notes that, regardless of where you are, when you call that 800 number, they can help route the call to the appropriate training network. It is 866-767-6114.
Okay, let's repeat that.
866-767-6114.
Yes.
All right, that's important. Well, we have just a little bit of time left. I want to thank you and also want to acknowledge your team and everybody that's involved. It's definitely a worthwhile endeavor, and that just goes without saying.
The courage and skill that you all are bringing to our marine life is so appreciated. Thank you so much.
And parenthetically, dog walkers, when they're on the beach and they encounter otters, what's the first thing they should do?
Well, regardless of what they're encountering, otters or seal pups or anything on the beach, keeping your dog on a leash is greatly appreciated. You might think that your very sweet little Fluffy would never injure a wild animal, but it's very natural for dogs to snap at something, especially if that something is snapping back. And of course, we want to protect your furry four-legged family member just as much as we want to protect the wildlife. And there are things that could go back and forth between those two species and even come to people. So for the safety of all, it's really best to keep them on a leash.
Casey McLean, thank you so much for joining us here today on Community Tides. Casey McLean, veterinary nurse and executive director of SR3, which stands for Sea Life Response, Rehabilitation, and Research. Let's get together again later on down the line.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Bye-bye.